Our next case for argument this morning is East Miller against the Lake County Highway Department.
May it please the court.
Mr. Bodensteiner.
Good morning. This appeal raises three questions concerning the Fair Housing Act. And more specifically, it raises questions concerning the meaning of Section 3617 of the Fair Housing Act, a provision that was at issue in a case before this court decided last November, the Halperin case. The first issue I will address relates to the scope of Section 3617 and what types of actions or conduct or might be actionable under this section. And more directly, this raises the question of whether, in a sense, whether the challenged actions in this case were violent enough. This court addressed that issue in the Halperin case and started by looking at the language of the statute, which is obviously the appropriate place to begin. The 3617 reaches actions or makes unlawful attempts to coerce, intimidate, threaten, or interfere with one's enjoyment of a dwelling. And so this statute relates to a situation where one has gained access to housing and is complaining that conduct was taken or conduct actions were taken that interfere with the enjoyment of it. In essence, the trial court treated this case as being a close case, but opted in favor of saying that the claims, the actions alleged here, did not rise to the level of being actionable under Section 3617. Now, if we look at that language, and I think the keys for purposes of this case are intimidation and interference with enjoyment. And there's nothing in the statute itself that requires acts of violence. There's nothing in the act itself, like in another section of the act, Section 3631, that actually makes certain conduct criminal, that talks about the use of force. In the Halperin case, this court referred to some of the more outrageous conduct, the burning a cross or actually assaulting someone physically, as obviously fitting within 3617. The court went on to say that there are other less violent but still effective methods that a person can be driven from her home and thus interfered with in the enjoyment of that home, and then refers to sexual harassment in one case, economic pressure in two cases involving municipalities as defendants. Then the court also raises what seemed to bother the trial court here, and this court says that it didn't think that Congress intended to convert every quarrel between neighbors in which a racial or religious slur is hurled into a federal case. And that may be correct, but it still does not answer the issue in this case. We're not talking here about a quarrel between neighbors. And more specifically, one of the points that was mentioned in the Halperin case was that the challenged conduct...
What is your best evidence that race played any role in the repeated injuries inflicted on the mailbox?
That relates to another issue, Your Honor, and whether or not the race did play a role. And the best evidence available to the plaintiff here is under the indirect method of proof.
Well, that's just to say you have no evidence. Do you have any evidence that race played a role?
Not direct, Your Honor. Not direct in the sense that comments were made, et cetera.
And is that there any evidence that the people on this snow clearing crew had a clue about the race of the householders in the different houses?
Whether they knew of the race? Well,
yeah.
There was one instance where Mr. Miller actually ran after the truck and confronted a Mr. Brown, the driver. So that would certainly be evidence that driver was aware.
After
that incident.
The mailbox was plowed under.
That's right, after that incident. And there's no question, the plaintiff here is relying on the McDonnell Douglas.
I don't see how the McDonnell Douglas test can play any role if the person does not know the race of the affected person. I mean, the whole idea behind McDonnell Douglas is that employers know whether applicants or employees are of a particular race and therefore can act according to that. But if you have action taken without even knowledge of race, I don't see what role McDonnell Douglas can possibly play.
But I think that would certainly normally be the situation. In an employment case, there would have been some contact between applicant and employer, or employee and employer. On the other hand, there might be circumstances where, if it's tied to national origin, et cetera, that maybe that was not apparent.
Yes, and then I don't understand what role McDonnell Douglas can play.
Well,
Do you have any case for the proposition that McDonnell Douglas is an applicable theory when the person charged with the discriminatory conduct does not know the attribute that's protected by statute, whether it's race, religion, national origin, and so on?
No, Your Honor. But I
would be shocked if there were any.
I think here the fact of the matter is that there was some basis. Now, whether it was at the point of the first event or not, in fact, you know, at one point an investigator was sent out here, an investigator of or an individual who was employed by the defendant was sent out to investigate one of the early claims. And there again, there was a face-to-face meeting between the Millers and the person who was doing the investigating. In addition, there was a meeting where the two individuals came out to repair. And so again, there was a meeting between the plaintiffs and individuals associated with the highway department. And so, aside from the issue I mentioned earlier about his tracking down one of the individuals, so certainly before the most outrageous of the actions here, that is the pushing the snow up to the garage door, there was knowledge of the race of this family on the part of the individuals associated with the highway department and the individuals that were involved in providing the service. And so based on that, it's our position that the McDonnell Douglas or indirect method of proof is available to the plaintiff in this case. And as we discussed at pages 11 through 13 in our brief, the plaintiff here can meet the prima facie elements of a case under McDonnell Douglas. The trial court then hit on the fact that the defendants had given a non-discriminatory explanation for one of the incidents, and that was to say we sent an investigator who found that incident was an accident. But the trial court does not address the fact that there was no explanation given for all of the other incidents. In fact, the evidence from the director was that there would be no explanation. There would be no legitimate reason for plowing the snow up a 20-foot driveway and parking it in front of the garage door. And so under that indirect scheme, I
must say, if that's a good theory, I've got an awful lot of lawsuits I can file against the city of Chicago because, alas, they do that to my alley all the time.
Well, I think we've all...
I can assure you that everybody who lives in my building is either black or white, male or female, etc.
I think we've all experienced that, but I think this was different than, you know, leaving a pile of snow out at the street that blocks your driveway. This was an intentional pushing the snow 20 feet up to the garage door. And as I indicated, the testimony of the director was that there would simply be no basis for that. If anyone did that, that person should be disciplined.
Is it correct, counsel, that we've got about 5 of these snowplow incidents in the course of 7 years?
Well, during the 7 years from when it started until now, the evidence showed that it was really happening between when they moved in 1997 and then the incident I just described in December of 2000. So maybe a period of 3 or 4 years with the 4 or 5 incidents of the mailbox being knocked over or struck in some fashion, and then moving on to, you know, plowing it up to the garage door, and then an incident about, you know, actually moving into the yard. And so, yeah, I mean, this, fortunately for everybody involved, this is not the outrageous cross-burning, no question about it. But as indicated by this court, in Halperin, there are things less than that that can interfere with one's enjoyment of their home, and particularly when it's the government that is engaging in those actions. I think that's a factor that makes this particularly egregious. And my time is up. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Latour.
May it please the court, Matthew Latour on behalf of the defendants appellees in this matter. It's an honor and pleasure to be here today. Hopefully a pleasure, Your Honor. I guess I'll reserve that until after I'm done here. Your Honor, we, on behalf of the defendants, we believe that obviously given the district court's opinion that the summary judgment in favor of the defendants should be affirmed for two bases. First off, one, the plaintiff failed to designate the sufficient evidence to show a discriminatory animus. Secondly, the plaintiff failed to designate sufficient evidence which would establish a pattern of harassment individually motivated to the plaintiff by the defendant. That's the standard enunciated, I believe, or I know by this court in the Halperin case as discussed by Mr. Bodensteiner. I'd like to address, first off, the second basis, Your Honors, with reference to the plaintiff's failure to designate the sufficient evidence to show the pattern of harassment invidiously motivated by the defendants against the plaintiffs. Now, contrary to the plaintiff's desires, and I think that this is a very important point, especially in terms of when we talk about a pattern of harassment, how often, frequency, severity, this is not a 12B6 motion. This is a motion for summary judgment. Henceforth, all of the allegations cannot be taken as true, as simply as that they just happened, as the plaintiff would have you to believe.
What was this, by the way, a single-family home?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it's a single-family home.
Is there an exception to the Fair Housing Act for single-family homes? Does it apply at all to single-family homes?
Your Honor, I would say that off the cuff right now, I do not believe I have that information to say whether it does or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. But in any event, you're not arguing it, and you haven't argued that the regulation discussed in Halperin is problematic, although Halperin certainly expressed some reservations about that question.
I agree, Your Honor. Yeah, you know, that was an issue that I guess we could have addressed. However, we believe that...
One would think that the first issue to address in a case like this is whether the statute applies, and then whether the section of the statute applies. Seems very odd to bypass these basic questions to get to something that may be legally beside the point.
Well, Your Honor, to the extent that the Fair Housing Act does not apply to single-family homes, obviously we would request that this court affirm
the summary judgment
to that extent.
Too late for that.
But we believe that the summary judgment motion or the district court's ruling on the summary judgment motion can be affirmed by applying the Halperin decision, as the district court did, Your Honor. And as I was stating, it's important that we acknowledge that these incidents, these mailbox incidents, should not be simply taken as true, as if they happened. Summary judgment standard requires them to be demonstrated by evidence, any evidence in this case. And what we have here is only one act that can be attributed to the defendants by the plaintiffs, by evidence. And that's allegedly this alleged snow pushing in the driveway. All of the mailbox incidents, none of which were witnessed or ever seen by any of the plaintiffs, no evidence even directs to the defendants. Now, granted...
The subdivision was in Crown Point?
Subdivision is in Crown Point, Your Honor.
Why is the county plowing a Crown Point street?
It is an unincorporated aspect of Crown Point.
It says a Crown Point address, not within the city.
Fair. Yes,
so it's
Your Honor.
Not in Crown Point.
Crown Point address, unincorporated county area, Your Honor. understandably, unquestionably, Fair Housing Act designed for broad application. However, as acknowledged by this court in the Halperin decision, this does not mean that every aspect of interference is federalized. Like as stated by this court, we must look to whether or not there's a pattern of harassment which has been shown to be invidiously motivated. And in this case, when we're dealing with conduct that is not violent or physically hostile, factors to be considered are frequency and the severity of the conduct. This case is clearly distinguishable from the case in Halperin. In Halperin, first off, it was a 12B6 motion that was being considered by this court. Therefore, all of the factual allegations alleged against the defendants were taken as true. Additionally, the facts that of the Halperin case show that the plaintiff was subject to vandalism, racial slurs, lights being cut down, trees being damaged, plants being removed, threats to make an example of by the housing association, non-representation at the board meetings, public humiliation, applying chemicals to their yard without their permission, and other things as enunciated by the court. It was all done so because of the race/religion of the plaintiff, who happened to be Jewish. These are all incidents positively attributable to the defendant. Under that basis, this court found that there was a pattern of harassment invidiously motivated against the plaintiff by the defendants. And henceforth, although it is recognized that actions such as cross-burning and Molotov cocktails are not the only things considered by a 3617 motion, nonetheless, those actions showed that pattern of harassment. This case, Your Honor, does not have a pattern of harassment. One action attributable to the defendants, snow being pushed in the driveway, does not demonstrate a pattern of harassment, invidiously motivated. Even if you consider that some of the mailbox incidents could be inferred towards the defendant, this is not a pattern of harassment, rather than a situation which could be dealt with better on a state law claim for negligence or property damage or things of that matter. Your Honor, this court, as well as courts all over the nation, draw lines as to where an action can take place and where it can't. And this is an area where that has to be done as well. We know from this court's enunciation in Halperin, as well as other courts' enunciations, where 3617 applies. But what we don't know is exactly where cutoff is. I'm sorry?
Halperin reserved the question whether 3617 states a freestanding claim.
I'm sorry, Halperin?
Yes, but of course, as you aren't making that argument.
Yeah, my understanding, Your Honor, was that that Halperin subsequently determined that as long as that regulation was considered valid, that 36B17 would be or 3617.
It was considered valid because we remarked in Halperin its validity had not been contested, although Halperin expressed considerable skepticism about it. But we've been through this.
Sure.
You very oddly have not asked us to reach the issue reserved in Halperin.
Well, Your Honor, and the reason for that is because 24 CFR 100, the regulation issued by the Department of Housing and Urban Development, helps to understand the exact premise that the defendants in this case are arguing, and as a basis of this district court's motion or grant of the summary judgment. Specifically, when we look at that regulation, it goes on to talk about how the threats and intimidation and interference of persons in their enjoyment of their dwelling because of race, which leads us to the first point, the requirement of a showing of discriminatory animus. And that is the reason why, for purposes of this matter, the regulation was not challenged. It helps us to understand that when you are bringing a 3617 action solely without alleging a violation of 3604 through 06, that there must be, as a part of the prima facie showing by the plaintiff, a because of race or a discriminatory animus, contrary to what the plaintiff is arguing in this case. Consequently, when we look at the language in 3617 in conjunction with 3603 through 06, and also in conjunction with this application, we know that where a claim, such as in this case, where the plaintiff claims that action was taken against her because of race, intentionally against her because of race, that the plaintiff must show, as a prima facie is one of the elements of the prima facie case because of discriminatory animus. And that was what was enunciated by the district court relying on the Grubbs case and also what was developed on page 11 in the brief submitted by the defendants.
Who's the property owner in this case?
I believe the property owner, Your Honor, is the plaintiff, Ms. East Miller.
Not her husband?
I'm unsure whether or not he, I'm assuming that he is property owner as
He's
well.
He's not a party to this lawsuit.
No, he is not a party. It's solely Ms. East Miller. Briefly, Your Honor, just to cover some of the things discussed by Mr. Bodensteiner, with reference to the knowledge by the defendants of the race of this plaintiff, in a situation where the lights were shining through the window, Mr. Miller testified in his deposition that he ran after the truck and determined and spoke with the truck driver. That was not an incident with regards to the mailbox, and in fact, Ms. Miller herself said that she didn't believe that the lights were being deliberately shined through a window, didn't dispute that they were doing just a normal part of their function when doing so. Therefore, Your Honor, we believe that the district court's decision should be affirmed in all respects. The plaintiff has failed to designate sufficient evidence which demonstrates a discriminatory animus. The plaintiff has also failed to designate sufficient evidence showing a pattern of harassment.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.